Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Summer League has officially wrapped up. The Cavs lost to the Lakers. Not their first loss to the Lakers this summer, but hope for the future with Colin Sexton dropping 27 points. The Lakers went full tryhards with their 23-year-old Josh Hart while the Cavs rested Jetty and let Zizic enjoy the World Cup. Carter Rodriguez is back from his work trip and ready to talk some Cavs. How's it going, buddy?
It's good. Poland was lovely. Had a lot of potato pancakes and pierogies and the like.
Man, potato pancakes are underrated.
Dude, I didn't realize. I'd never had them before. Or at least, I think I had a fundamental misunderstanding about what potato pancakes were supposed to be. I thought they were also a breakfast food, like regular pancakes.
Yeah, and yeah. You thought it was a pancake substitute rather than like a different
form. Yeah, it's
form
a completely different kind of food, and it was amazing. Katowice was really, really cool, and I would recommend anyone would go there, because you also can live like a king, because $1 is worth 3.68 zloty, and prices weren't so inflated that wasn't an enormous difference. Do you feel that when you come to the States, like the U.S. dollar being more valuable, or does it pretty much wash? Break even.
No, I definitely feel it. I just typically get enough U.S. cash before I go over. But at the same time, like, if I get enough cash in my wallet before I go over, I don't think about the difference. But you definitely feel it, especially when you're getting said cash.
That's the way I felt with euros. Like paying with euros when we were in Italy, it was just like... It was like everything felt so cheap, and then I realized like how much more we had spent by the end, you know. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. Anyway, basketball. Sorry, I just thought that I think currency stuff is interesting, like cost of living and like the way it plays out. The Cavs were actually pretty fun this summer league, despite the fact that two of their three, if you're feeling charitable, four interesting players. Didn't play almost every single game.
Yeah, it made it a little bit tougher to watch. I was very much here for the Billy Preston season. He just got better, like, with every single game. Like, you could tell there was rust at the beginning, and Preston just looked progressively more and more like a player that can be productive in Canton next season.
Sound you just heard was everyone who listened, every vestige of the LeBron era listenership we had that doesn't care about the Cavs turning off the episode.
You don't think people want to hang around for Billy Preston in Canton?
Billy Preston moves the needle for such a small percentage of the population. It just happens to be our listenership.
Well, as long as he's moving the needle for our listeners and not recklessly on his own car, I think we're going to be okay.
Misty buddy. So I'm kind of glad you said that, because I missed, you know, I was only able to watch the last couple games in passing, and I was honestly a little disappointed by Preston where he was from what I saw early on in summer league, where it was like, oh dude, this dude can't dribble at all, and is like really lungy defensively. He's not quite as athletic as I thought he was going to be. Did you think we were getting more of a freak than we did?
Not necessarily. I definitely understood that it might not completely translate. Like, I thought he looked really fast out there. But there was actually more control to his game than I anticipated initially. Like, I expected just 110 miles an hour the entire time, because if you look at the highlights, that's what it is. But I felt that there was more control to the game and a more measured approach than I would have expected. So that might have contributed to just kind of how you perceived him, how he played.
Yeah, I don't know. Where I felt I saw him like not as athletic as I wanted is like I felt like he had to like load up to jump a little more than I wanted. I wanted him to be just a guy who just like levitates up like effortlessly. But you know, I thought he definitely, from what I saw, got better and better over the course of summer league, and regardless of how he played in summer league. I don't think that was going to affect the way I felt about giving him the two-way deal. Because I think it's exactly the right kind of shot teams should take on prospects, especially, excuse me, had a burp lingering.
That's gross. Yeah, you're gross.
You know, this is the unfiltered talk you get out of a man who's spent the last week in the Eastern Bloc. But you know, I think
I think some of it
from what I saw.
Yeah.
But I don't. I think he should spend most of the year in Canton. I don't think there's. I would put the chances on him getting a big league call up, like a full time contract, slim to none.
Yeah, I agree. Unless things go completely to shit, like if Kevin Love gets traded and all the other veterans get traded, and it's just
you need bodies.
We're going to experiment. Yeah, we're going to experiment, and Preston's been playing well. Then I can see it changing. I think as he gets more confidence, you'll probably see him look more explosive. Like he moves up and down the court quickly, but when you have guys that size, it's kind of like a train. It doesn't look like a train's moving fast, but then when you actually have it go by you, it's like, okay, well, that thing's actually moving with some pace. I just think that some of it's rust, some of it's he's probably not in the best shape of his life at this point. But I agree that that's the type of guy that you take a shot on because he was someone that was projected to have potential lottery-type talent, and that obviously didn't pan out, and he kind of reduced the number of workouts he took. He didn't participate in the combine, obviously had some off the court issues, but that's the type of gamble you take. And it was encouraging to at least have one other guy other than Sexton that you could kind of keep an eye on in summer league, because John Holland, as much as he played well in some games, I think most of us are ready to move on from the Holland experience.
Yeah, your boy isn't an NBA player, and that's no insult. Most people aren't, but John Holland certainly isn't one. I think before we get to Sexton, who's obviously kind of the crown jewel, we should talk about the Cavs' second-year players, who in every way looked the part, and I think you have to be really thrilled with what we saw out of Zizic and Jetty Osman. Zizic averaged 20.5 points, 12.5 rebounds, and 3.5 assists on 63% shooting in his two games. Jetty was a little less efficient. He averaged 20 points even, 8 rebounds, and 4.5 assists. God, that guy can pass, man. Alongside 2.5 steals on just 42% shooting. But he was also chucking from three at points. Clearly trying to expand that part of his game. I don't really think you could ask Jetty more out of those guys.
Yeah, Jetty, it was really clear that one, he had tired legs after playing internationally just shortly before summer league took place. I don't think he had a lot of time to recover there, but it was so clear that he was too good to be playing in summer league. And I did like that they let him do a few other things. Like they let him bring up the ball. They let him kind of play outside of his comfort zone. And I think that's positive. It was more what you saw from him internationally. I don't think his handle's necessarily tight enough to do that at the NBA at a consistent level. But those are the type of things he's going to need to do now, because you don't have this defined role alongside LeBron James like you used to. So he's going to need to step up. He's going to need to provide some supplemental playmaking. And hopefully he's going to be able to do that along with Love to kind of alleviate the burden on Sexton next year.
Yeah, the thing with Jetty that is really interesting about his long-term ceiling is that, yeah, he still can't dribble. And, like, that's fine. By the way, like, I love that we, like, act like guys add stuff to their game by summer league. It's like, dude, the season ended 3 weeks ago. like they add stuff they add stuff in between for the most part.
One thing I did find interesting, though, I was listening to a podcast with David Thorpe, and he was talking about the work that he does with NBA players in the summer. And he said that in the first month or two, that's like the first month, month and a half, that's where you add something. And then after that, it's just working on that one thing. Like, you don't continue to add stuff later on in the season, or in the off season, I should say, because you want to work to get whatever you added up to an NBA skill. And then the next summer you work on something else. Like, it's not a constant thing of working on rounding out your game and trying to add things throughout the whole summer. It's, all right, I've worked on this. Let's continue going at it. So, to be clear,
I'm talking about guys like Jetty Osmond who had deep playoff runs who needed to recoup a little bit. Well, like guys like Josh Hart, they've had months, you know.
Well, Carter, you're saying he didn't have a lot of growth since mid-June where the season ended, but the last time we saw him play was like in April. So he might have been working on some stuff between games.
Yeah, I'm not saying he hasn't grown. I'm just saying, like, I just get a kick out of that when people are like, oh, he added this, 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 and this. It's like, yeah, has he really yet? Probably needs a little time to let that set in. But what I was going to say before I went on that tangent is that, like, what's interesting is Osmond still can't dribble, right? But we know he can pass.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see what those passing instincts look like right now. I mean, the second game of Summer League was by far his best. And what made it look so good was he had just had some absolute dimes out of the pick and roll. And once his handle gets better, where guys can't pressure him and get up in his space and he can't cope with that, I really think he's going to have, he has a lot of potential as a secondary creator, kind of maybe in like a Nick Batum kind of role, where he's like a guy who can pass, move the ball, run a little primary pick and roll. That's not what he does.
Carter, but, you have to compare him to a white player. Do this right.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Does Batum?
Hedo Turkoglu. No, just kidding.
Jeez. Yeah, so we got to get him on the HGH.
Yeah, we got to get him on some roids. But yeah, I just thought he was really, really good. I thought he was trying to expand his game by taking some pretty difficult threes off some pin downs that weren't going in at a super high rate, but that's fine. Really, really pleased with his. When we see those articles after Summer League, you know, there's always the was too good to be here category.
Yeah.
And you're not going to see Jetty on almost any of those lists because he only played two games.
But right,
I think if he had been around longer, we would be seeing that.
I really did get a kick out of Zizic in Summer League because, like, that's a guy that's been playing professionally for a while. And you forget just how good he is offensively. Like, his footwork is good. We don't know how he's going to be on the defensive end. And I would like to see him get more burn. But when you're looking at these guys, these undrafted players or kind of fringe guys that are in and out of the G League, he just gets deep position and scores on them like every single time. And the only reason he was like missing shots was he got so tired by taking so many shots because he just hasn't taken that many or dealt with a real workload. And like just by the end of the game, he's gas. He's like, okay, I've got my 24 points and my 15 rebounds here and my arms are going to fall off.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I really like that he has a little face-up game to him, where if you give him a little room, he'll face up and just pop a little, you know, eight-footer. And he's got touch on that eight-footer. I think that he looked enormous compared to everyone he was playing alongside. I thought his post, I mean, I'm a sucker for a guy who can score in the post. I have that little bit of old school in me. I really do think he's got nice touch around the rim and is very confident and good hands. Like, yeah, and I think footwork is a thing that, like, we pretend it can be taught, but I actually don't really think it can. I think it's skill and feel. Like, you can get a little better, but there's no way to drill yourself into being like a a fluid post player. You know, you can add a drop step or a step through, and that's fine. But there are certain guys who just move well down there and can manipulate the guy who's on their back, and Zizic is one of them. So it's going to be hard for him to find minutes in a crowded front court. But I think he looked about as good as you could have asked. I mean, 63% from the field, that's That's so encouraging, especially after you look like such dog shit in last year's summer league for the Celtics.
Right. Yeah, he really did. That's actually a good point. And I don't know.
He didn't look like an NBA player at all.
I don't know if that. I can't really recall because I wasn't really paying attention to him because I wasn't thinking, oh, well, that's going to be one of the pieces we get back for Kyrie. But I don't know if he was playing internationally prior to that, like shortly before that, because that was the case with Jetty here. And you saw how tired Jetty looked at times. But that could certainly...
There weren't qualifiers last year. I know that. So it would have had to been league play.
Mm. Yeah.
And I doubt he'd be doing that once he was already under contract with the Celtics. So, yeah, I think he just wasn't ready, you know? And, like, this year he definitely was. He looked the part of a guy who battled with a title contender, you know, a team that made the finals. And battling with teams like that all year, you learn some stuff. And I just definitely think he looked the part. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're a Cavs fan, you have to be really thrilled with how the sophomores looked because, you know, frankly, there's not a ton to be excited about on this Cavs team this year. I mean, ultimately, you got three or four guys.
You're such a stick in the mud. Everything's exciting. Zizic, per 36, man, that's a 20-10 player that shot 73%.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, we need those. Like, if Zizic and Jetty don't look good, all of a sudden the prospects for guys who you really can, like, look forward to seeing grow in a rebuild, it gets...
Then you got to start really talking yourself into Billy Preston, and that's when you go down a dark corridor. But
yeah, so the fact that they look good is super encouraging for Cavs fans. And the young Bull, he was actually pretty fun.
I'm glad you brought him up. I was going to we're going to get to him immediately, but I just want to say you were implying that this team isn't going to be fun when they brought Channing Frye back. So come on, man.
Oh, my guy, Channing. Oh, I was so happy to see that. And you know what? I don't care if it doesn't really make sense because they already have three centers on the roster. I just like the guy. And as a fan, that is my right to say, I don't give a shit if it makes sense. I don't care if Travion Graham made more sense. I like Channing Frye, and I'm glad he's on the team. And he's the kind of guy who knows how to work, knows how to be a veteran, can teach a bunch of kids how to play the right way. Adds extra spacing to help Sexton's development when he's out there. Is one of the few guys who can actually play alongside guys like Larry Nance and Tristan Thompson and let those guys slide down to the four, which they actually are going to need to do, by the way, because they only have one power forward on the roster.
Yeah, true. And here's the other thing.
It's actually it's a fine move.
If the starters of, let's say the starters are Sexton, Hood, Jetty, Love, and Larry Nance. Let's say they're just too damn good. You can also just go with let's just say they're too damn good. They're just unstoppable. You can go with that bench lineup of Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, or JR with Frye at the three, Tristan and Zizic. And just let Clarkson take shots with absolutely no spacing so that you still get a high pick.
That's great.
You might have to go with
that. That's the way we want to be thinking, Justin.
Yeah, I just think we're...
Good job, pal.
I just think we're going to be too good. But we should probably talk about Sexton because I think it's a little hard to not fall in love with him after Summer League. Like, there are concerns to his game. The jumper's going to take some time. The decision-making wasn't always great, but at the same time, it was Summer League where everyone was playing isolation basketball. Especially just given the situation the Cavs are in, having a player that tries, that's exciting, that's lightning fast, and does whatever the hell that defensive stance is, that gives you a little bit of warmth in your heart.
My only regret is that Channing Frye wasn't with the team at that point to clown him for that. Because you know he would. If RJ and Channing had been on the team as he did that, like on the bench, they would have been howling on the bench.
Oh, Frye would have been mimicking him on the sideline.
Oh, yeah. That would have been hilarious. You know, the thing with Sexton, I think we should definitely go through the pros first. Fast as hell. Jesus Christ. Has a little more vertical burst than I thought he did. Like, can definitely get up there to finish Drew Fowles at a really good rate.
By the way, that's really important. Like, it's important that he looked fast and athletic against summer league competition, because if that didn't translate at this stage, there's it's even less likely it's going to translate in the NBA. And for his height, it's really important that he looks like a freak athlete and plays like one, because that's going to be really, really important to his game.
Yeah. I remember my best friend always described, and this was like in summer league that my friend came up with this for Dion Waiters. And it's like, even when he did good plays, it was like, I've never seen someone who looks like they're working that so hard to like he was just expending every ounce of possible energy to get a look off. And like, I think Sexton gets up to speed effortlessly, gets by guys effortlessly, has enough craft in his game. There are a couple of times where Biggs got switched onto him, and it looked like he was a little lost when he was like, I don't know, like 18 feet away from the basket, and the big had sunk, you know, 14 feet away because they weren't respecting his jumper. And instead of settling for those jumpers, he did a nice job of using his craft to get by them without over-penetrating. And still find good angles to finish. So I thought that was definitely really encouraging. With regard to the passing, you know, it's interesting. He did have a lot of assists. I don't think anyone's going to confuse him for Steve Nash anytime soon. But you know what? He has enough. And I'll say that his vision's better than I thought it was coming into this. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. Like, he made a lot of good reads. As I said, they were just playing so much isolation basketball that I don't think he can read into his assist per game or the assist percentage. I don't think he has like next level vision, but I think there was a willingness to give up the ball, and I think that's the really important thing, because you don't necessarily need to be the greatest creator for other players. But if you're willing to give up the ball and you have supplemental playmaking around you, you can overcome that as a team. Like, the way that the NBA is going is having multiple creators. And I think Sexton is someone that can thrive in those situations. And to me, it's funny that you bring up Dion. And part of the reason why I think Sexton's really going to be embraced by this fan base is he seems to be the fantasy version of Dion that people had in their heads. Like, what Dion was on good days. Like, I don't think he's going to have the most consistent three-point shot, but he's going to have stretches where he's hitting it a lot. I think he's going to actually compete hard on defense. I think he's not going to come into the league being a great defender right off the bat, because no guards are. But he reminds me so much of good Dion, and I just think that he has a better chance of panning out than Dion did, because he's not showing up at summer league fat as hell.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite, I think it was a Matt Moore line. Yeah, I might be wrong, but one of my favorite Matt Moore lines ever was that every Russell Westbrook dunk comes with an implied fuck you. And I think that was Matt. I hope it was. But I think Sexton's got a little bit of that to his game, and I think that's just something any fan base is going to fall in love with.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that as LeBron leaves, we get a point guard that's kind of like the combination of Westbrook and Draymond.
Oh, yeah.
Just
but maybe like a little less foul on the Draymond.
Yes, yes.
You know what I was actually just thinking about recently? And it kind of speaks to how spoiled Cavs fans have been in this one particular facet.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be weird having the team's best scorer. I mean, and I guess lead ball handler, because Love is going to be the best player on the team still, obviously. But assuming they move him, it's going to be weird to have their like core guy have really inefficient nights from the field.
Yeah,
because LeBron's never inefficient. At least the modern version of LeBron. And then Kyrie, you know, for all of his warts as a young player, getting buckets efficiently and posting, you know, good true shooting percentages. And,
there was
never one of them.
There was the narrative that Kyrie was inefficient when he first came into the league.
And there was just no evidence to support it.
And, like, if you look at his rookie season, I just pulled it up here. 18.5 points per game, shot 47% from the field and 40% from three. Like, holy shit.
Like, we ain't getting that with Colin Sexton. And I think we're going to have to, like, adjust our expectations to, like, get used to that.
Yeah.
To that, like, oh, yeah, most players don't do this.
Yeah.
Even really good ones. And I just thought that's an interesting idea. We just haven't had to deal with that. And
one of the interesting things that was actually brought up on the broadcast was how many one and done point guards outside of Kyrie have actually shot well from three, lower like shot well period in their first year. Like, you, it's just not something that you see. Like, you might see it with an older point guard, like Damian Lillard was older when he came into the league. But for the most part, with like one and done point guards, these young guys, it takes them a while. And I think something that going to work to Sexton's advantage is he seems to have a knack for getting it to the free throw line. Like, he,
that's going
to
really help his efficiency.
It's really,
he needs
help.
That can't not be a part of his game because of his height limitations and his shooting limitations.
It's right up there with the athleticism, right? He needs to be faster than everyone and he needs to know how to get to the line. And he seems to know how to put the ball in places and drag it through guys. And again, that's going to be something we're going to need to get used to seeing if it does, in fact, hold up, because we were very used to Kyrie not getting calls. We were used to LeBron not getting calls. And to watch a Harden-esque game where Sexton's getting a lot to the line a bunch, I think that's going to be a little bit of an adjustment.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's just going to be an interesting thing. And to your point about the shooting percentages, I think if the Cavs don't blow it up, there are a few point guards with Sexton's limitations that have been in a better situation to be efficient than this team in its current construction. You have great vertical spacers like Larry Nance, and then you have a bunch of shooting. I mean, J.R. Korver, Love, Fry, Hood if he comes back, like, this is quite a bit of help and quite a bit of spacers for, you know, I feel like rookies are normally on these like kind of mismatched teams,
mm-hmm.
You know, high end rookie point guards. They're on these mismatched teams that aren't really suited to them. And, you know, it's like maybe one or two good pick and roll partners. The Cavs are going to have a lot of options for Sexton here if they keep their roster together. And I think that's going to really help his development because he won't have to play in such outrageously confined space.
Do you think the Cavs bringing in Fry and kind of the reports that they're willing to listen to offers for Love, but they aren't shopping him, do you think they're actually going to make a conscious effort to keep Kevin Love? I know the beat writers have kind of expressed skepticism, but I don't see Channing Frye signing here if Kevin Love, like if the organization is saying we're going to trade Love at the deadline or if we're going to trade him. Like, I feel like he would go chase a ring or stay in L.A., because the Lakers aren't going after rings.
Because one is not the other.
have to differentiate between the two. But I just feel like it's the strongest signal yet that they're actually going to try to convince Love, who's a bit of a weirdo, and I don't think we're ever going to be able to figure out exactly what that guy wants or values. Maybe they want to keep him.
Yeah. I think that they want to keep him, but I don't think that's the same as they're going to. Like, I think we have to be ready for them to have a change of heart depending on how the first end of the season goes and depending on what kind of offers they get. I think the kind of offers they're getting and that they'll get in this trade market will determine Kevin Love's, or like make it more likely for Love to stay than any commitment to him or to avoiding a tank. Like, I think the reason they keep Kevin Love is I think they're going to get a bunch of dog shit trade offers that aren't worth it to them.
Oh, midway through this podcast, we got some breaking news. According to league sources, the Sixers have had discussions about trading Jared Bayless to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Kyle Korver.
Whoa, I don't want to do that.
I would be assuming that the Sixers are including assets in that. So,
I mean, if they give us like a first or something, I guess, you know, I guess we should jump into this because now is just as good of a time as any, because I was getting ready to talk later in the pod about how I think the Cavs roster is really imbalanced right now. They have They have 3 point guards that all will expect minutes in George Hill, Colin Sexton, and Jordan Clarkson. They have 3 centers that will all expect minutes in Larry Nance, or maybe not expect, but should be getting minutes in the case of Ante Zizic. So Nance, Zizic, and Tristan Thompson. They have 1 power forward on the roster in Kevin Love. They have 1 small forward in the roster in Jetty Osman. They have 2 shooting guards, assuming Rodney Hood isn't back, and Kyle Korver. So if they trade Kyle Korver for a point guard and Jared Bayless, this roster is not going to make any sense. And that maybe they'll just buy out Bayless. Who knows? But like, they need some wings and they need some forwards, and they need to like they need to consolidate at a few key positions, and that actually makes it harder. Now, if you're just trying to get better, right?
Yeah.
Or just trying to get assets in the future. Yeah, you don't not do a Korver Bayless deal if they get like a first out of it or something.
Yeah, if
like
you
that.
Can get the 2021 first from Philly, that'd be great.
I mean, I would be stunned if you got a first that good. I think it would have to be a protected first. But regardless, if you get a first out of Kyle Korver, you do it. But all of a sudden, Tyronn Lue's job is looking a lot harder.
Yeah, it really does. And you would have to wonder, okay, is George Hill the next domino to fall? Because I think they're in a unique position with these non-guaranteed contracts that Korver, Hill, and JR have, that teams that are looking to create space are going to trade for them. And like, that deal obviously makes a ton of sense for Philadelphia. They've lost some guys in this summer, and probably if they stand pat, they're going to take a step back. I know that they're just going to get a year older, but a lot of the players that were there for that successful second half run that they had aren't there. So someone like Kyle Korver is great for them, and then they also have the option to not pick up his non-guaranteed money next year if they want to be a player in free agency. So I think that makes a ton of sense for them. And I would imagine that the Cavs would be trying to get an additional asset along with that.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a weird one because Bayless is expiring next year. I thought he had 1 more year after next year. So,
yeah, Bayless.
So they're not helping Philly get off much money.
Oh, God, so you're right. That is weird.
So I don't really know. I get why Philly would do this just because they want another shooter. But I don't get why they'd give up a good enough asset for the Cavs to dump Kyle Korver, because Bayless isn't going to help this Cavs team.
Hey, look at that on Twitter, because this is our favorite segment. Justin reads things off Twitter. Chase Ruddig, who is totally normally a piece of shit to me in my mentions, says the real answer, the motivation behind this trade, is so that the Cavs can continue to fuck with the Raptors in the playoffs by trading Korver there.
It's a good point.
Yeah, God, now that you mentioned that Bayless isn't expiring, that becomes even more baffling.
Yeah, I just don't think that this is going to happen, ultimately, and because there's no reason Philly should give up a first just to upgrade from Bayless to Korver, right? And there's no reason the Cavs would take on Bayless for Korver for a second. At least I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I'd rather just have Korver around the kids and keep... and have him continue to be an influence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because clearly he's already transformed Jetty's shot.
It's an interesting... this feels like nothing to me. Maybe I'm crazy.
The interesting thing to me...
I would be surprised.
The interesting thing to me is that the reporter there, Keith Pompey, who is a Sixers reporter, he had said that the 3-team deal that sent Melo to Atlanta is going to be held up for a couple of days because the Sixers have been in discussions to get another deal done. And then this is the second part of that now, is that this is the deal that the Sixers have been trying to pull off. So the fact that it has dragged on and is holding up a trade, and they anticipate it to continue to do so, makes me think that there's some part of this that is more complicated, that we don't know, that there's some sort of asset coming back one way or another here that hasn't been disclosed yet, because that... that transaction on its own, if that's all it is, or if there's just a second involved, that's a simple, hey, do you want to swap Jared Bayless for Kyle Korver? Yes? No? Maybe? Like, that's not a multi-day discussion here.
Yeah, it's weird. It's just a weird spot. I mean, I guess if they give up any first round pick, to get the Cavs an expiring contract back, that's easy money. I think you have to do it. I mean, obviously, I'd miss Kyle Korver, but I'd be happy to see him go to a really good team.
Yeah.
And they need him. They need guys like him who can shoot.
And Korver was the one guy I expected to be gone before the start of the season. Like,
and also, Korver is kind of fun going back to Philly. Didn't he start his career there?
Yeah, he did.
I know he played with Allen Iverson, which is outrageous.
That is so absurd. Man.
I don't know. We'll see what happens there. I just want to see what the hell they do with this roster. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like Tristan Thompson shouldn't be on this team if they can make it happen. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I mean, it makes me sad, but...
Of course.
But, I mean, Larry Nance, I'm assuming there's going to be an extension with him prior to the season starting. Just because you look at the way the cap is going to go up in the next couple of years, and the best thing you can do is extend guys if you have any intention of keeping them. So I think Nance qualifies for that. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Rodney Hood here. And Zizic, as we mentioned, like we don't know what he can be, like how serviceable he can be defensively, but with the skill set he has offensively, you're always going to have a role as a big off the bench. Like look at Greg Monroe, or some of the other examples around the league where you have more traditional centers coming in off the bench providing offense, because typically those second units do have trouble scoring. And you can kind of eat against other team second units if you're a legitimate 7-footer that has size and has skill. So
And more than like that, you just have to figure out what you have.
That also helps, especially when you're going through a rebuild.
And like I forget who said it. Maybe it was David Zavac, which must have broken his heart. Someone said that Tristan Thompson will not be a part of the next good Cavaliers team.
That makes me sad.
He just probably won't. They were probably 4 years out, and it just doesn't seem likely that that's how it's going to play out. Like, I mean, it'd be cool if he was a lifetime Cavalier, but
yeah,
it just doesn't feel like that's going to be the case.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem realistic.
So opening up room there, and so I think if I'm the Cavs and I'm looking to get off players, the two players I'm looking to get off are Tristan and Jordan Clarkson, and boy, am I not giving Kobe Altman an easy job.
No, you certainly are not. Tristan's another guy I'd like to see go to a good situation. Like, I think there are actually teams that could use him. But with the term he has left on his contract and it all being guaranteed, that's not necessarily easy. Clarkson probably isn't the easiest sell either, but I still think that there might be teams that are willing to take that on. It would be interesting to see if that Clarkson is someone that you can include in a deal with another player, maybe to send somewhere like Charlotte or to any team really that needs that off the bench offense. Because I don't think he's as bad as he was towards the end of the year. Like we have a fairly decent sample size of him being a competent rotation player. He has his flaws and he's probably not worth the money he gets, but he can play. Like he's not a complete scrub.
Yeah, I just don't think anyone's going to want him after the playoffs. Like, it's just a bad time. And more than anything, man, it's like I don't see a world in which he aids or can play with Colin Sexton in any context.
That is fair. That is absolutely fair.
It just can't
fair.
Happen. And if you can't play with Colin Sexton, I don't fucking need you. Like, I don't want you on my floor. I don't want you on my roster because... everything matters. That he's the only thing that really matters long term right now for the Cavs, him and Jetty, and maybe Zizic, depending on what we see.
What would be funny is if that was the part of this Korver deal that we didn't know, is that Kobe Altman's been trying to foist Jordan Clarkson onto the Sixers.
Rain down on me, Kobe Altman. I would be so thrilled if somehow they got a guy worse than TJ McConnell to take TJ McConnell's rotation spot.
Isn't it kind of ironic that Cavs fans are now rooting for Kobe and Lakers fans are still rooting for Kobe?
Bleh. Awful. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do here. I felt like the Bucks were the place that Korver was going to end up.
I did too.
Maybe that's just not going to happen. Feels like he's a perfect complement to a guy like Giannis.
While we're talking trade talk, I do agree that the reason you don't hear any love buzz right now is probably that they're getting shit offers. It is interesting to me now with Toronto basically going all in with Kawhi Leonard. Bruce Arthur and Eric Green did mention Kevin Love as one of the players that they might look at. Toronto basically kept all of their best assets. And if you are willing to take on that Ibaka contract for one of Toronto's better young players, so Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby, that gets interesting. Like, I don't know how you would feel about that, because Ibaka would at least theoretically give you some spacing and kind of some a guy to still keep around Colin Sexton, because I don't think you ever want to put him in a position like Kyrie was in his first 2.5 years here, where there just was no shooters at all. I think you want to maintain some spacing, but I think something like that could be interesting and could be compelling to the Cavs. To a point where they just say, well, we want to keep them, but this offer is just too good.
Am I crazy to think that the Raptors are so high on OG that they wouldn't want to include him?
I think you are not crazy for that. I think Siakam would be more likely. And to be honest, for the Cavs' purposes, I kind of like Siakam a little bit better because he's a big that he has some shooting ability from the mid-range. He can defend five positions. He rebounds. He runs the floor. He can dribble. And when you look at these upcoming drafts, they're so heavy on wings that I think you understand that if you're trading Love, you're not going to be good. All of a sudden, you're going to be drafting higher. If you can get a dynamic big like that, you can get the next wing you want in a draft and pair him alongside Jetty Osman.
Yeah, what would be interesting is, like, what kind of lineups would the Raptors run if you had Kevin Love out there all of a sudden? I just wonder if that's the guy they chase, you know, because, like, all of a sudden they have this unbelievably switchy, defensively rooted lineup with maybe not quite enough shooting, but enough. You know, I think Love pushes them towards being an offensive juggernaut as opposed to a defensive juggernaut. But, I mean, there's no way he wouldn't help in a major way. Maybe there's a way you can get Anunoby if you somehow, like, eat Norman Powell's contract.
I think you'd have I think it would have to be some sort of nightmare deal where you're taking on both Ibaka's contract and Norman Powell's contract.
Yeah, but honestly, I don't know, man.
And I don't think OG gets included unless the only situation I can see them trading OG is if it was a deal. And this was another thing they mentioned on the Back to Back podcast was if they go after someone with like 3 years left on his contract, like Damian Lillard, where they're pairing OG with Kyle Lowry and other things, picks, other young players to try to pry Dame away to make it more compelling for Kawhi to stay. But we're just getting so far down the rabbit hole that I just don't know what deals are out there. And I think that was your initial point with Love.
Yeah, I just don't think anyone wants him, which is sad.
I want him.
Yeah, I do. I'm happy to keep him around. I don't see the market. I think his value is low for multiple reasons. One, the Cavaliers are trying to blow it up. Two, he can opt out of his deal at the end of the year. Three, he's a slow-footed kind of throwback player in a league that's increasingly obsessed with switching on defense. There's just a lot of reasons why his market isn't as good as his market doesn't reflect his value as a player. And that's why I'm still on board with extending him, because I don't think there's a number that you could extend him at that would make him a negative asset. Maybe I'm wrong, But unless, and I don't think he'll cost a full Supermax, you know, to do so. So I think if you can extend him even at an overpay, I don't think he's a negative asset. I don't think we're going to hit a Blake Griffin situation where he's an albatross,
no.
despite being good.
No.
So, and I just like the idea of him helping Colin Sexton develop and having a team that isn't completely bereft of talent. I don't see a lot of appeal in a total tear it down rebuild, especially when lottery odds are flattened quite a bit. You are much more incentivized to finish fifth, sixth, or seventh in the lottery or in the lottery order than you have in years past. And I don't think he's so good that the Cavs won't be in that space anyway.
That's my thing. And I'm not going to assume that our podcast listeners read what I write, but I had wrote a Fear the Sword that what I would do if you could convince Kevin Love to sign an extension and pitch to him, okay, it's going to be kind of a 1 year lull here. We're going to keep your minutes down. We'll keep it at like 28 minutes a game. We'll play you primarily with Sexton and our young promising players. So you're not going to be asked to shoulder any just completely garbage lineups. And if you get banged up at all, we're going to sit you. We're going young. And then next year, next summer, after we draft another player high in the lottery, hopefully, we'll start adding players in free agency that fit, that make sense around this team. And then you trade off Hill, you trade off JR, you trade off Korver, like those non-guaranteed contracts that would have some value. And I think if you go young, you limit Love's minutes. He misses the 20 games a season he normally misses. I think you're probably going to finish pretty bad. I think you can be like Memphis last year.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, ultimately, I think that's the best plan forward unless someone knocks you out of the park.
Because you're probably not getting value. Because you're not getting value for Love.
So I'd rather him add value within the locker room and with their young guys. And, you know, hopefully someone falls in love or thinks he's the missing piece at the deadline. But I'm certainly not trading him until the deadline unless someone really floors me.
I agree. Well, we'll see what happens. I'd like some trades because, as you said, the roster as it's currently constructed just doesn't make a lot of sense. There's just log jams. It's weird to have log jams when you're not a great team. Like that,
yeah,
that shouldn't be the case. And they just have so many specialists and guys that I truly believe can actually help teams in other situations if they're not asked to do too much. Like, I think George Hill can still be a valuable player. It'd be interesting to see if a team like Phoenix that seems to want to go all in, but still doesn't have a point guard outside of Brandon Knight, maybe they have interest in him. I think JR might have, well, if he's going to have some value, it's going to be to a team that's trying to make the playoffs and wants to clear space for the following summer, which I think there's a significant number of teams that can do that. And then Kyle Korver, I think, just straight up has value, both as a player and as a non-guaranteed contract. So we'll see what happens. When something does happen, we'll likely pod about it. I will be away for a few weeks. I'm off getting married next weekend and taking the following week off. So,
hey!
So I'm going to rely on you to kind of hold down the fort, Carter, and to find interesting guests and to not fuck this up. So please
you
don't
know
fuck
I
this
can't
up.
Do that.
Please don't fuck this up.
It'll just be more. Let's call a spade a spade.
Yeah. Well, the exodus of listeners with LeBron being gone, I can now blame on you because we've still been doing strong. So the inevitable drop off is going to be blamed on you while I'm out of town. So at least I have that for my own ego. Thank you to the listeners that have stuck around. Remember, you can support the podcast by going to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/chasedownpodcast. Get nice little rewards there. We have a great Discord chat where you guys can message with Carter and myself all day because we really don't have a lot of better things to do. You can also support the show the old school way. Go to iTunes, go to whatever app you listen to the podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friends, your family, people you hate that you want to make them listen to a podcast that they're not going to like, tell anyone about the show. We appreciate all the support we get, and it helps us grow. So thanks to Carter. Good to have you back. Now I'm leaving you. Thanks to our listeners for sticking around. Until next time, go Cavs.